Welcome to Know the Name, Know the Answers radio show. I'm your host, Sharon Lynn Wyatt, and I am the author of Know the Name, Know the Person, and the creator of Nameology Science. And as we said last week, the first Thursday of every month, I'm going to be answering your questions on names, but the rest of the Thursdays, I am bringing in my friends to answer your questions. You will be astounded by the people that are coming in and what they know and the questions they can answer you. Tonight's guest is Phil Bolsta. Now, I just adore Phil's work, met him many years ago, bought so many of his books for presents and gifts over the years. I started buying them wholesale because I was buying so many. I love this book. And my friends, even after they've had this book over 10 years, have said, oh my gosh, that's still like my favorite book or one of my top five books. And they're still writing me thank you notes. So Phil Bolsta wrote the book Through God's Eyes. So this is what some of off the back cover, what it says. When you feel stuck in your job or relationship, when all you've worked for leaves you feeling empty inside, when fear of what is to come consumes sleepless nights, when love seems to be an impossible choice to make, there is one solution that brings true peace. See the world through God's eyes. Now look through God's eyes and you see that you are being guided in every moment with infinite wisdom and inexhaustible love, that life is unfolding with indescribable beauty and grace, that spirit is gently urging you to align with your will with divine will and be a source of love, hope, and healing energy to all who cross your path. Now, I remember so thoroughly as a child, I had two constant repetitive prayers. One was, help me to control my emotions so they do not consume me, that I can get them under control, and please help me make my will align with God's will. So maybe that's why I love this book. But the ancient wisdom permeating through God's eyes offers the hope and promise that you can escape from the prison of human perception, welcome peace, love, and joy as the dearest of friends, and become a more positive and powerful force for good in the world. Now, one of the reviews on his book is that Robert Peterson wrote, and he's the author of Out of Body Experiences, one of the most important books I've ever read. It's the owner's manual God should have given you when you were born. I so love this book, and we are so delighted that you get to ask questions of Phil tonight. Welcome to Know the Name, Know the Answers, Phil.
Thank you, Sharon. Great to be here as always.
Yeah, I love having you on my shows. You know, you're just always one of my favorites for all that you know. So while we're waiting for saying to everybody that you can start calling in, okay, I would like to know what, you know, got you motivated for this audience to know this, to write this book that took you so many years and is such an incredible piece of work.
Well, I knew back in 1997 that I needed to write it. When I was looking for the book that explained spiritual principles I was learning about, I thought there had to be a book that laid out all these spiritual principles I was learning in a logical and organized and engaging way. I just assumed there had to be one book that explained how all the principles interacted, how to weave them together into a cohesive worldview, and how to practically apply all that spiritual wisdom to daily life. And I couldn't find that book. And I remember thinking, well, I guess I have to write it myself someday. Because I was just determined that all that knowledge and all that wisdom should be gathered together in one easy-to-follow book so others wouldn't have to go on a giant spiritual scavenger hunt and piece it all together on their own like I had to.
I love this book, all 538 pages of it. Guys, anything you need or want is right here in this book. Now, remember, you can call in with questions to Phil. Our call-in number is 701-719-4207. Again, it's 701-719-4207. 4207. So, Phil, how many years did it take you to do all of this? It's an incredible piece of work.
Well, as I mentioned, I knew that in 1997 that I needed to write it. That's when I thought, oh, I'm going to have to write this myself someday. But I also knew that I wasn't nearly wise enough or experienced enough to write it at the time. So fortunately, even though I didn't know exactly what the book would end up looking like, I could recognize the material that should be in it. So I just began collecting concepts and quotes. And I know you love quotes too, Sharon, that I knew would be in the book. And finally, after 8 years of compiling this research and study, I just felt capable of finally competently interpreting and articulating all that ancient wisdom. So 7 years later, the book was completed, and I didn't work on it 7 straight years. I took long stretches off because I had to earn a living, but there were long stretches where I did just put this first, for a few years.
Well, I'm quoting you on page 234 in your book, and you have a quote from Khalil Gibran, whom I really adore. I've read all of his works. Mm-hmm. And it says, "Work is love made visible." Wouldn't that be nice if we all looked at work that way? It's just love made visible. And if you cannot work with love, but only with distaste, it is better that you should leave your work and sit at the gate of the temple and take alms of those who work with joy. Now,
yes,
I've noticed, and so I look at this book as your work of love. Absolutely true. But what's also incredible is what you wrote at the end of every chapter and how you put the book together. So talk to us about how you aligned your book and then why you decided to put your own thoughts at the end of the chapter and how you feel like that enhances the book, because I love that part too.
Well, first, let me say that you're absolutely right about working with love and joy, because people have asked me, my God, this is a huge project. What was the biggest challenge? And I can honestly say there was no challenge. I saw every part of it as wonderful. I didn't want to include myself in this book at first. I just wanted it to be focused on the spiritual principles. And I had a number of people review it at different stages. And the response I kept getting was, you have to put your own stories in this book. How did you come to the place where you are now? And I resisted that until finally I thought, you know, they're right, but I don't want to weave myself into the chapter. So I included a story at the end of the chapter. I just thought that sharing my own experiences would make each chapter's principles more relatable and give readers ideas on how to apply them in their own lives. And actually, there's another reason. I wanted to show people that I'm not some religious recluse or out-of-touch academic. I'm just an average person living an average life with flaws and failings just like everybody else. So if I can embody these teachings to some degree, so can anyone who reads this book.
Well, I'm going to quote you again on page 278, where you're writing Robert Schuller, and he says, "Commit yourself to a dream. Nobody who tries to do something great but fails is a total failure. Why? Because he can always rest assured that he succeeded in life's most important battle. He defeated the fear of trying." Would you talk to us about that fear of trying and what you've seen?
Yes. In fact, you may be familiar with Teddy Roosevelt's famous quote about that. It's kind of a long, but it says it so well. But first, I just want to say that, yes, it's the calling. If you feel a calling, you have to pursue it. I mean, I just knew that I had to write this book, and it was on the front of my mind since day one. It was an assignment given to me, I looked at, and I just had to complete it. And Teddy Roosevelt wrote, "It is not the critic who counts, not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs and comes up short again and again, because there is no effort without error or shortcoming, but who does actually strive to do the deeds, who knows the great enthusiasms, the great devotions, who spends himself in a worthy cause, who at the best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at the worst, if he fails, at least fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those cold, timid souls who know neither victory nor defeat.
You know, and it's so right, and we all fail. And I look at it that if you fail, and say you're going to fail 99 times, and maybe it's the 100th time, because by then you lost track of the counting, that you finally succeed, it is that person that constantly gets up like the pop-up doll that actually does finish succeeding. So we have Pauline from New York on our line, and she's got a question for you. Welcome, Pauline. What would you like to know from Phil?
I wish I read the book, because it sounds like it would be a shortcut. I've been doing this for 30 years now, almost. Oh, no, maybe 20. And trying to, like, I think there's something I'm supposed to be doing, and I don't know what's blocking me besides my clutter and getting my life, my old life, put away so I can move forward. I know I've had all these ideas all these years, but I've not put any of it into action. Is there anything he recommends I do? Obviously, maybe the shortcut would be the reading his book. I'm guessing. besides that.
Okay, well, Pauline, before you answer Phil, while you're speaking to her, Pauline, would you give me at least the first letter of your last name?
Okay, I think I gave you this before. My real last name, is the first letter is S.
Okay, thank you. All right, Phil, you're on. Thank you.
Well, Pauline, first of all, I'll mention this and to everybody as well. You can email me at godseyes@me.com. That's GodsEyes@me.com. And I will send you a free sample chapter, the one called Fulfill Your Destiny, because it speaks to this. And it's essentially, you have to identify the urgings of your heart, not what's in your mind. Pay attention to whatever distracts you and commands your attention. But those are just a few top line thoughts. The main thing is that, as Elizabeth Gilbert said in a well-known talk that Oprah introduced her, she talked about how she always told people to find your destiny, to find your calling, because she knew what she wanted to be when she was 6 years old, a writer. And then someone in the audience, and on a talk she gave in Australia, emailed her and said, "This just made me feel worse. I felt horrible because I don't have a calling." And that really woke up Elizabeth Gilbert. She just Googled that. It's on her website, actually. And she talks about how some people may be flipped from one thing to another that is their calling in that moment. And that could lead to something else that's very important to them that they have to pursue. And then when they have a sense of completion, then they enclosure, they can move on to the next thing. So if you don't feel you have one calling, don't feel bad about yourself, because that happens to so many people. It's just something that you may have a whole lot of things you need to do in this life instead of one big thing, and that's beautiful.
Pauline,
that's very helpful. I love that, because I have gone like that. I'm like a butterfly or a bee that goes from one thing to the next, but I never finish one anything. By the time I get there, I realize this is not what I truly need to do first. It's like, and then I realized I got to work on me first. I was kept trying to help other people, but I wasn't able to do that because I didn't finish working on me and my things, my personal self. Until I was able to finish that, now once I really finish all of it in the physical form as well, legally everything, then I can. But once I get all of that out of the way, then I, like you said, I think I will, at that point, we will step forward to whatever. But I'm glad you reminded me, not with my mind. I got to remember what it's going in my heart that pulls me that way, rather than what I think the world needs me for. That's not my job. It's not what the world needs me for. It's what I feel impassioned to do, that I have to do.
Right.
I love that, what you said.
And Elizabeth Gilbert calls people like you hummingbirds, because you go from flower to flower to get your honey. And that's beautiful. So whatever works for you and you feel fulfilled as if you're doing what you should be doing in that moment, that's all you have to worry about.
Thank
now,
you.
I will Remember. Give you a hint, Pauline, of what your name indicates, all right?
Okay.
And that is, your name indicates that one of the greatest lessons you came to learn is how do you want to use your power of influence? And so that's like an overriding umbrella. How do you want to be influential with others to help them? And your name indicates that you have very eclectic thoughts, and that part of what you came to do in the world was to share those eclectic thoughts so that people can get out of their tunnel vision and look at the world more as a whole and in oneness, instead of as separate little flowers, but instead
Thank
see it
you.
As a bouquet.
Thank you. You did sort of tell me that when I had a name reading with you. That's, thank you. It's funny. So you don't remember that you told me this, but that's exactly basically what you told me with my full, I gave you a full name at that time. And much more you told me, but I love that you actually repeated most of it. Thank you so much. It makes more sense now with what your guest, Bill, was it? I didn't catch his name in the beginning.
His name is
Bill.
Phil.
Right?
It's Phil.
Phil. I thought it was Bill.
No, it's like okay. Dr. Phil. He has all that knowledge. You know?
Oh, but he's not like...
Yes,
but
it's
gentler.
Like Phil, like
he's much gentler. He's not in your face. He's not one of the... Because Dr. Phil is not gentle like Phil.
Oh, yeah, but Phil Bolster is so gentle. And I just think of Phil when I'm thinking of any kind of philosophy, because it kind of sounds the same at the beginning, right?
Right.
And
500
just,
pages? I really good. That sounds like a reference book.
it's beautiful. It's 538 pages. It's sitting in front of me. I actually own more than one copy because I have a two-story cabin in the woods, and I have to have one downstairs and one upstairs because I'm not traveling between the two. You know,
Great
my reading
idea.
Room is downstairs and the bedroom's upstairs, so I've got one in both.
And you can always loan it out if you have to.
Oh, no. I'll buy them their own copy. I don't loan it.
Okay. I'll let you go. You know, I know when I called in, because I'm used to BBS shows, you gave that number, it's a call in to listen to the show. I think that's the number that you gave out.
I think you're right. Oh, thank
in
you.
In case nobody else calls, because I called and I told the your producer this, and I think he tried to tell you, so I don't know if you heard that. So this way, people call the 800 or the 323. There's a direct number as well.
Oh.
Not the 701. Only to listen to your show. If they can't use a computer, they can listen to the show with that 701 number.
I am so glad you called in, Pauline. You're right. The direct number is 323-744-4831. So if you want to call and talk with Phil, the number is 323-744-4831.
Thank you, Dr. Sharon. So in the next call, I could call in. Bye.
Thank you, Pauline. Bye. Yes, Phil.
I just wanted to mention something. Pauline was saying it sounds like a reference book. That's exactly how many people use it. I've had so many people tell me that they keep it on the coffee table or in their bedroom and they read one page a day, and that's a really nice way to start the day or end the day. And Andrew Harvey, who has become a friend, has said that he keeps it by his bedside and reads it every night, just a page or two.
Well, that's where I keep mine. One is in the bedroom and one is downstairs in the reading room.
Right.
Now, I would also like to mention your book, 60 Seconds, One Moment Changes Everything. Talk to us about that book.
Well, 60 Seconds is a collection of 45 inspiring, life-changing stories that I interviewed prominent people like Deepak Chopra and Carolyn Mace and Neil Donald Walsh and Wayne Dyer and Joan Borisenko and many others. It started just frankly because this was about over 10 years ago. I was reading all these spiritual books and I thought the people who really I resonated with, I wanted to connect with in some way. And I thought the only way to do that really is perhaps ask them to tell me a story and I could print it in a free spiritual newspaper in Minneapolis where I lived at the time. And so I just did that as a labor of love and as a way to connect to people I admired And then when I got enough stories, I started thinking, well, maybe this is a book. And they're such great stories, all sorts of different angles, and they're just so wonderful that it turned into the book, 60 Seconds, One Moment Changes Everything. And I just reached out to well-known people, and it came together. In fact, the publisher told me, okay, you've got 45 stories here, but they should be arranged in some way. So I looked at it and thought that, okay, there are three main themes, and then I started sorting the stories into those themes, and it worked out exactly that there are enough stories for those themes. And that's kind of similar to what happened with Through God's Eyes, I could mention if you want to know that. But yeah, it just seemed like the whole thing was divinely orchestrated.
Well, I was just going to say that your books are absolutely a treasure. You've got a quote on page 372 that, you know, we're all so goal-driven, and in our culture, it's like we are so evaluated by what we've accomplished instead of who we are. And I love these quotes on goals that you've put together. And this one's by Robert Pirsig that says, "To live only for some future goal is shallow. It is the sides of the mountain which sustain life, not the top." Mm-hmm. And I love that because it always reminds us that it's the journey. You know, it's how we get there. It's not the destination. You know?
And the first thing I think of when somebody says goal is, yes, goals are wonderful. Goals are necessary. But you have to view goals through the prism of enlightened, loving detachment, because if your happiness depends on achieving your goals precisely as you envision, or on events playing out according to your wishes, or on other people doing exactly what you want them to do, you're condemning yourself to a lifetime of misery. Now, when people hear detach, they get the wrong idea sometimes. Detaching from outcomes doesn't mean that you're apathetic and unmotivated. Quite the contrary. Detachment means that you care deeply, but from an objective, enlightened perspective. And that enlightened detachment flows out of heightened awareness and the conviction that life is unfolding as it should. You're fully engaged in life while humbly acknowledging that a greater wisdom than your own is at work. And besides, obsessing about specific outcomes blocks you from aligning your will with divine will, and attachment and attunement cannot coexist. One more thing about that, because it's so important. People think, well, should I just hope for the best if I shouldn't do anything, if I'm not attached to it? And there's two different schools of thought. When a certain outcome is desired, some people say, let go and let God. And others adopt an aggressive do-it-yourself mindset. Those two actually dovetail personally, because you reconcile this free will versus divine will conundrum by doing what you feel guided to do while staying open to unanticipated outcomes.
Well, and a lot of times those unanticipated outcomes are a whole lot better than what our limited thinking had provided to us.
Absolutely. What happens so often is that when you pursue a goal, when you're intently focused on it, by the time you make progress towards achieving it, your intentions, your priorities may have changed due to other epiphanies, other growth, other insights, and suddenly that achievement is no longer as important to you as it was before. Instead, you look beyond it and see another goal that now fits where you are in life and fits who you are much better. But you only could get that far by pursuing the goal that you initially pursued. But again, follow your intuition, do what you feel guided to do, but stay open to that.
Well, I have an email from Phyllis who is saying that she is moving from a northwestern state all the way over to North Carolina to pursue a PhD in her field. And she's moving to a part of the country where she hasn't lived before. She won't know anybody. And it's like starting all over. And she's in her 50s. And this could be considered a little bit scary. She would like to focus on the excitement of it, but it's a little bit scary. And so on her behalf, I would like to give her a quote from your book and then have you add to that, Phil. And the quote is on page 373, and it's from Henry David Thoreau, who says, "We must walk consciously only part way towards our goal and then leap in the dark to our success." And I feel like she's done everything she can to walk her part way, and now she's taking her leap, not knowing what's coming next. What would you like to add to that?
Absolutely right. It's so easy to stay in your comfort zone. But I think this quote you mentioned in our last interview, Sharon, by Hafiz, "This place where you are right now, God circled on a map for you." And that is really beautiful because it's time to have an adventure. If you just stayed in one place and kept on doing what you're doing without trying to grow, chances are you'll get stagnant. And so it really involves a willingness to invite adventure into your life, and it involves surrender. Now, surrender is the cornerstone of a spiritual life. And would you like me to speak to that or move on to the
yes.
next?
Yes. Oh, okay. No. Because it's so important to surrender, because surrender does not mean giving up.
No, it doesn't. See, that turning point came for me a few years ago. See, I knew that surrender was at the foundation of a spiritual life, but I wasn't sure what that looked like. Most people probably aren't. And then I had an epiphany. It occurred to me that if I strove to think and say and do everything only to please God, then no matter what happened, I would be at peace, because I would know that I did my best to serve God with pure intention and a loving heart. And that to me is what surrender is all about, striving to be in alignment with divine will in every moment. And when you live that way, you're essentially acting as a pure instrument of God, and the external circumstances of your life don't matter. Now, granted, very few people have achieved unbroken attunement with the divine, but it's the striving with pure intention that's important. The effort is everything. And something pretty wonderful and unexpected happened the more I tried to live that way. I think, like many of your listeners probably, I had always been a people pleaser because I wanted people to like me. But then that made me feel like, well, I need to say things in a certain way. I need to act in a certain way. I was being inauthentic to some degree. But when I shifted my mindset and directed my thoughts and words and actions only to please God, I found that I was liberated from the prison of other people's expectations and judgments, and any concerns over whether others liked or respected me dropped away, freeing me up to be more authentic and transparent and loving. And that led to other people liking and respecting me on a deeper, more authentic level. So I can definitely tell you from my own experience that the more you try to live only to please God, the more peaceful and beautiful life is, and the easier life becomes. You're in the flow and your days unfold more smoothly.
You know that wanting to be liked, or putting importance on wanting to be liked, is in your name, Phil, because your last name ends in an A. And anytime one of your names ends in an A, that's where that shows up in the name.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and when you were speaking, all I could think of was, oh, thank you, God, that my name doesn't have an A in there someplace, so that's important to me.
Well, yes, and that's the way to transcend whatever your name says about you, however you are, you can transcend who you are now by more consciously surrendering and trying to live in that way. And you did mention, Sharon, that lots of people have the wrong idea about surrender. They
yes.
may think that doing so means they'll be relinquishing their free will and diminishing their capacity to reason and act. But the opposite is true. What you're actually surrendering is your self-centeredness and the belief that you are alone and unprotected in an uncaring, unforgiving world. You see, by surrendering, you're not admitting that your life is unmanageable. You're trusting that God has a better plan for your life than you do. And finally, if you believe that a supreme loving intelligence governs all of existence, and that's governs, not controls, then surrendering to God, to the universe, to life, whatever term you want to use, I view it as the most logical decision you can make. In fact, the way to look at it, I think, is if you are being guided with infinite wisdom and inexhaustible love at all times, that would mean that life is unfolding in a way that has your best interest in mind. And that would mean that every situation you're presented with is a gift, an opportunity for you to learn and grow and move closer to fulfilling your potential. And I did, in fact, write a whole ebook on that called The Logic of Living a Spiritual Life. And if your listeners want to email me at godseyes@me.com and ask for that ebook, I'll send that to them free of charge.
Oh, great. I'll put that in next week's newsletter also. So this is so exciting, Phil. I always like, you know, speaking with you. So the next topic I wanted to ask you about, because of different emails that I've received, is on self-reflection and how important — you have a whole section of your book on here — but how important is being able to self-reflect?
Well, it's everything. If you can't self-reflect, then you're stagnant. You won't grow. You only react to circumstances in your life instead of taking action in a proactive way. So you really are going to be pulled in all sorts of different directions without setting the direction of your life yourself. And that's why I offered at the end of each chapter, in addition to the personal story, there's 12 self-reflection questions at the end of each chapter. Those questions relate to the content of that chapter. They're intended to spur self-exploration, build self-awareness, and heighten readers' appreciation and enjoyment of life. Their answers to those questions will be uniquely their own. And what's important is the answers that are right for them may not be right for anyone else. In fact, they may be right for them for only a short while, because circumstances change, people grow, people change. But in being self-reflective and taking stock of who you are on a regular basis — many people do this every day. They introspect before they go to bed at night and say, how did I act during the day? Did that meet the expectations of who I want to be as a person? How can I improve? Those questions are the very foundation of how to live.
Yeah, and they're so important. Well, you are listening to Know the Name, Know the Answers with Sharon Lynn Wyatt. And our guest tonight is Phil Bolsta. And we will be right back after this very short break.
How would you like to be able to read other people's minds? Well, the next best thing is here. When you know how to read a person's name, you know how the person thinks, feels, and behaves. Each letter in our name holds a key to unlock our true essence. Our name contains both our gifts and challenges in this lifetime. Nemology science discovers personality secrets hidden in the placement of the letters of our names, including the first and last impression people remember about us. Sharon shows us how to interpret the arrangement of letters as outlined in her book, Know the Name, Know the Person. Sharon Lynn Wyeth created Nemology Science after 18 years of research and testing her theories, and has supported thousands of people around the world in understanding themselves and others better. You'll enjoy Sharon's unique teachings as she shares her system to learn the gifts behind your given birth name. Even if you don't like your birth name, there are jewels in this book. If you're thinking of changing your name, ready to name your child, or wanting to get along better with others, this is the book for you. If you'd like to improve your relationships and change your life for the better, get the book today, Know the Name, Know the Person, or visit www.knowthename.com. That's www.knowthename.com.
listening to Know the Name, Know the Answers with Sharon Lynn Wyeth. And our guest tonight is Phil Bolsta. Phil, tell us how we can get, you know, everybody can get a hold of you.
They can email me at godseyes@me.com. That's GODSEYES at ME.com. And if you'd like to know more about the book, go to godseyesbook.com. Or go straight to Amazon to order by God's Eyes Amazon. God's Eyes Amazon .com.
And the name of the actual book is Through God's Eyes. And I absolutely, like I've said, this is one of my all-time favorite books. And I'm now going back to page 285, where the whole section is on service versus self-gratification. Because so many people I know, they self-sacrifice so much that they're actually doing themselves harm by they're putting everybody else first. And so I love some of these quotes. The first one I want to read is by Esther Hicks. The only thing that holds you back from getting what you want is paying attention to what you don't want. And that would lead us into focus. And Alan Cohen writes a quote in here that says, the only reason the same thing keeps happening is that you keep focusing on what happened. So instead of focusing on the possibilities and the desires, we're focusing on what we're not wanting and the past. And the last quote I want to give is Eckhart Tolle, who says, both abundance and scarcity are inner states that manifest as your reality. What would you like to add, Phil, on service versus self-gratification?
Well, I actually wrote a blog post about when selflessness becomes selfishness, because it's so important. One woman told me that she was miserably tired every day, and she just didn't know if she could go on, but she felt she had to keep grinding away because her family's needs were more important than her own. And I told her that taking care of everyone else without also taking care of herself was doing a disservice to everyone in her life. Yes, living selflessly is a noble cause, but it's guaranteed to backfire unless you also practice enlightened self-care. Because if you eat poorly, you don't exercise, you don't sleep enough, and ignore your own emotional needs, you're going to make yourself sick. And ultimately, someone who lives like that is going to be sacrificing the very thing she was sacrificing for, the well-being of her family. It wasn't in their best interest to have a wife and mother whose mental and physical health were deteriorating, because then who would take care of the caretaker? The more you dedicate yourself to living for everyone else at the exclusion of your own care, the more likely that everyone else would end up focusing on her and for all the wrong reasons.
It was very interesting when I was in an ashram with Sai Baba in India. And one of the things that he portrayed was that when we do for others what they can do for themselves, we are actually saying to them, we're stronger than you and you're weak. And therefore, we are building our own karma, because now we have debt to them because we didn't help them become strong enough that they could do it for themselves.
Absolutely. That worked with my own daughter too, because I had a tendency to want to rescue her, and I finally realized, wait a minute, I'm not doing her any favors. In fact, when she was going through a tough time in her early 20s, I said, you know, I feel for you, I love you, you know, she's the joy of my life, I'd do anything for her, but I said, what you're going through now is really, really valuable, because the tough times I went through are what made me come to the realizations I needed to have in order to become a better human being. And I said, what you're going through now will not only enable you to grow in ways that you wouldn't have otherwise, but later on you will be able to help people who are going through what you're going through now because you've been there.
Yes, and I think that's very important. You know, I used to have people I knew in high school that really judged the homeless people and the alcoholic people that were out on the street and whatever. And our minister at the time said to us, when he saw what was happening, he said to all of us, how do you know that's not an angel in human form that is there needing to be drunk, needing to be homeless to administer to those other souls that are choosing that path or having that experience. And how do you know that's not an angel to also teach all of us a lesson not to judge?
Very well said. Every human being is a child of God. And when you start to look at that, at other people through that lens, for example, I try to look at people like I look at my daughter. When I was a massage therapist and I would work on people as if they were my daughter, that changes everything. Judgment falls away and you are just present and loving and encouraging. And that's a beautiful way to engage with people.
I so agree. With all my years in the classroom, I used to always think, if this was my child that I had given birth to, how would I want the teacher to react to what had just happened? And that really helps get you in the right mindset. I want to address something that Kaylee Versveldt is doing. She is one of the stars on Born This Way, and she has what some people would call a disability, which is that of having Down syndrome. But she always says her motto is, look at our abilities, not our disabilities. And she has started a t-shirt line all around kindness to remind people to be kind. And that is such a gorgeous part of your book. And I'm going to quote William Wordsworth when it said, on the best portion of a good man's life, his little nameless, unremembered acts of kindness and of love. And then you also have from Wilford Grenfell, start some kind word on its travel. There's no telling where the good it may do will stop. And in our world today, with all the turmoil and the dissatisfaction that's going on, I feel that kindness is becoming incredibly important. Would you talk to us on kindness and your kindness challenge that you have in the book?
Yes, kindness is at the very foundation of how we need to engage with other people. And kindness, by definition, requires you to be humble and have purity of intent and a willingness to put someone else's needs before your own. Now, one thing that's on the negative side of kindness is if your act of kindness is tainted by your ego's desire for recognition, then that will karmically backfire faster than you can say, look how thoughtful I am. Because when your intent is pure, you become a channel of divine love. And when your intent is not pure, then it's not going to end well, because people will see through it. They'll know that you're just trying to do something nice as your for your benefit of your ego instead of them. And it just doesn't take you where you need to go. And I do have a section in the book called The Kindness Challenge. And the challenge is to look through God's eyes, just as the title of the book, and try to serve as a channel of divine loving energy. Because even if people you try to help walk away in a negative frame of mind, the love and light you sent them is still helping them in some small way to heal. I firmly believe that. And when you choose kindness, pure kindness, you're acting selflessly in ways that serve God. And when you, as I said, choose to be anything but kind from a pure intention, you're acting selfishly in ways that serve only yourself and your own ego. So it's really comes back to selflessness versus selfishness, but from a pure loving place that you also practice enlightened self-care. Because when you speak or act in a mean-spirited way, meanness takes up residence in your heart, and peace and kindness are evicted, and God is barred from entering.
And you know, Phil, wouldn't you say that today in this society that everybody's being asked to choose a side?
Yes. And again, that comes down to detachment and trusting that events are unfolding in ways that serve the higher good. But it also brings up the question of, are you co-creating everything that happens to you? And why doesn't God prevent people from acting in horrible ways and doing horrible things to others? And that is a fascinating subject, because a lot of people think, well, why is God allowing this to happen? Why is there so much suffering in the world? And in my view, God doesn't directly interfere, because by definition, we have free will, and free will would be rendered meaningless if it wasn't interfered with. However, when someone exercises their free will to do evil things, that harms other people in many horrible ways. But the way I look at it, because people say, well, so does everything happen for a reason or not? And given that divine guidance may be thwarted by another individual's act of free will, I think it's more accurate to say that everything that happens has purpose or creates purpose. No matter what happens, God works with what happens to make the best of what happens and to guide you back on course whenever possible.
I love that. Phil, tell us again how to reach you, what you're giving everybody for free, which is so generous of you. Would you mind giving out that information again?
Sure. My email address is godseyes@me.com, GodsEyes.com. And you can request in your email a free sample chapter from Through God's Eyes, as well as a free ebook, The Logic of Living a Spiritual Life. And to learn more about Through God's Eyes, Peace and Purpose in a Troubled, Finding Peace and Purpose in a Troubled World, go to godseyesbook.com, or to order directly from Amazon, go to godseyesamazon.com.
Thank you. I love this quote you have from Richard Bach, who is also one of my favorite authors, and I've read all the books, starting with Jonathan Livingston Seagull and everything he's written since then. And you have a quote that says, if you learn what this world is, how it works, you automatically start getting miracles, what will be called miracles. But of course, nothing is miraculous. Learn what the magician knows, and it's not magic anymore. And so I love this quote for the reason that your book helps all of us with all these fabulous quotes. See how the world really works from those great philosophical viewpoints that seem to have a little corner or a little edge or a little bit more knowledge on things and how the universal laws applied in our human world. Is there a favorite quote that you have in your book, or is it hard to have a few favorites?
I have some favorites, and I love a couple more of Richard Bach's. One of them is absolutely the way I live. He said, you don't have to fight to live as you wish. Live as you wish and pay whatever price is required. And that is so profound and powerful, because if you're looking first at how do I earn money, you probably won't realize you might not feel the tap on your shoulder to say, hey, look over here. That's what I did with writing the book. I just focused on that and not the logistics of life, which maybe wasn't so smart in some respects, but it all worked out in ways that I couldn't have expected. And one more Richard Bach quote I love is, the mark of your ignorance is the depth of your belief in injustice and tragedy. What the caterpillar calls the end of the world, the master calls a butterfly.
And oh, I love that.
Yeah, a couple more quotes if I could share. I love quick ones.
Yes.
Ralph Waldo Emerson says, All I have seen teaches me to trust the Creator for all I have not seen. And that really beautifully sums up the way I like to look at life. And finally, C.W. Ledbetter said, it is one of the commonest of mistakes to consider that the limit of our power of perception is also the limit of all there is to perceive.
You know, each one of those quotes could cause someone to go into thinking for a good long time on what the true meaning and how that would apply in their life and when that knowledge would best be used and exercised and integrated.
Yes. And I'll give you one more quote by Mark Twain because it's so important to understanding and having empathy for other people, because so many people think, oh, what I'm going through, my troubles, my challenges, it's worse than other people challenges, what they're dealing with. But Mark Twain said, nothing that grieves us can be called little. By the eternal laws of proportion, a child's loss of a doll and a king's loss of a crown are events of the same size. And that's really true, that if someone's suffering, they have filled the sphere of their suffering just as you have, even though what you're each suffering about may be very different in terms of the size of it. They still suffer.
Well, and it's all relative, because
yes,
if you look at the size or length of time that an adult has to understand something, so then it might take, you know, the gigantuan thing to cause suffering because there's more understanding versus the small things that can make a child suffer again because they don't have that understanding yet.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, and one of the things that I'm always, you know, reminding myself of is compassion and the importance of compassion. And I think every age has a quality that we are all to learn during that age. And I happen to think we're in the age of learning compassion because it's so needed right now and so challenging to have.
Yes, and I'd like to speak to a piece of that, because we talked about, for example, the way I looked at my daughter's tough times. And the reason I was able to step back, and her mom was wrecked emotionally from it, but I was able to help her in ways that perhaps her mother could not, because when you observe the circumstances of a loved one's life with enlightened detachment, that's a lot more difficult than looking at your own life that way. After all, you know, you care about their well-being more than your own. However, peace comes when you understand that you can be caring and supportive while respecting that your loved ones have their own path to walk, their own lessons to learn, and their own agendas and values and priorities that may diverge widely from your own. Because, you know, there's a lot of stake there. If you detach from that kind of drama, that can mean the difference between living a peaceful, happy life and making yourself sick from worry, stress, and grief. And here's the important part. You may tell yourself that you are being compassionate by caring so much it hurts. But in truth, your excessive empathy deprives your loved one of the strong, emotionally healthy support they need. You're not going to do them any good if you're stressed out and wiped out yourself.
Yes, well, absolutely. And I think sometimes the best thing we can do is simply just listen.
Oh, you know? Yeah. I learned that the hard way, having a daughter and a wife and trying to solve problems, just like the men are from Mars, women are from Venus type of thing. Men want to fix things. And when my daughter came home from high school and said that she was going through a challenge, and I knew exactly how to fix it because I went through it. I was excited. And she finally said, Dad, I don't want you to fix anything. I just want you to listen.
Phil, we've got to end on that note. I'm so pleased that you were able to join us tonight. Next week, everyone, I am having Megan Benatti join us. She's a tarot card reader. So if you'd like to know a little bit about your future, Call in next week with questions, and you can find out from Megan what the cards are saying. Phil, thank you again. This is Sharon Lynn Wyeth from Know the Name, Know the Answers, saying goodnight and signing off.